It is my great pleasure to introduce to you my good friend and colleague, David Briscoe. David is a very successful macrobiotic teacher and counselor and runs an online school at www.macroamerica.com. And David is not here as a teacher, although he may share us his great wisdom, but he is here to share us his recovery story from schizophrenia with macrobiotics. So without any further ado, David, thanks for joining us and for sharing your story.
Thank you, Fia. My pleasure to be here, and hello to everyone. I really consider myself an extraordinarily fortunate man, because in 1967, when I was my last semester senior in high school, after a number of years of various health problems, including being hospitalized for kidney infections and bad sore throats and mainly developing ulcers, finally one day the family doctor came in and said, "David, how would you like to see a psychiatrist? Something's going on here. These physical health problems you're having just aren't common, aren't normal for a young boy of 16 or 17. And so I didn't really know what he meant by a psychiatrist, but I said, sure. And I went to see the doctor that he recommended, and then through that doctor, a number of different psychologists and psychiatrists did varying tests, which I don't remember too much about them today, but at the end of all of the battery of tests and those doctors putting their heads together, they came up with the diagnosis of schizophrenia. I didn't really know what it meant. I didn't really understand it. It was more of a shock to my parents than it was to me. But I went from there to the doctor, the psychiatrist that had been recommended to us, and began a period of private treatment, including taking various medications, and finally ending up with one that was probably the most commonly recommended psychiatric medication of those days, which you don't hear much about today, but it was called Thorazine. And I took Thorazine from 1967 up until 1972, three times a day, every day, and continued on trying to, help myself with the therapy and this and that. But all it really did was, the Thorazine especially, just kind of submerged all the issues I was having and my thought processes that were pretty chaotic, and I increasingly withdrew from the outside world, and it became a harder and harder work to bridge the gap between my inner life of my thoughts and imagination and all of that and the outside world of day-to-day life. And although through the help of the medication and the therapy, I was able to continue a fairly normal daily life, the medications really just submerged my issues in looking back at it. And then I found out later, actually, that my parents were told in the early days of that diagnosis that, "Don't ever expect me to ever have children or get married or have close relationships or really live a normal, active life. I probably would never graduate from any kind of college or university, but if they wanted to, maybe they could send me off to college just to help me feel normal." And in fact, that did happen. I did go to Kansas State University in Manhattan, Kansas. And one day, in 1972. I remember it was a cold February time. I came home from classes, and at my door there was a stack of books, and I picked them up, and it turned out that they were cookbooks that a friend of mine was giving to me a week before I had been visiting her at her apartment, and she must have sensed some interest in me. She was into herbs and natural things, and I had no idea what all that was. But as a result of our meeting, she had decided to give me these cookbooks. And most of them were, as I recall, the titles were more like yoga cooking and wheat germ and honey and yogurt and that type of thing. And I really wasn't drawn to them. It didn't appeal to me for some reason. But among these cookbooks, there was one that said the title Zen Macrobiotic Cooking by the author Michelle Abicera. And that title really reached out to me for some reason. And I started looking more carefully at that book, and I didn't really understand the recipes or much about the foods it was mentioning, brown rice and azuki beans and some of the terminology, yin and yang and those types of things. I found them curious, but not all that appealing at the time, so I didn't really cook for myself much. But what I found interesting was in that particular book, there were little references, little quotations to concepts like self-responsibility and this is your life, and you know, you can take hold of it and not let it be run by others, or let your life be determined by diagnosis from someplace else. And I found the philosophy of it and the concepts of balance and so on that it was referring to be very appealing. And in that book, he was referring to someone as the master, as the person who had made these quotes and so on. I didn't really know who that referred to at the time, but I realized later he was referring to George Osawa. To this day, I have not been able to reconnect with the giver of that book as much as I've wanted to, and I thank her every day for making that kind gesture. I don't think she has any idea whatsoever that her gift of that little book, what that did for my life. It totally changed my life. I started cooking from that little book in my little basement apartment when I was in college on a little electric hot plate. I didn't have a kitchen. And all I had found to cook was in a little vitamin-type store in the student shopping area of that little town. And I found in there a little tiny bag of brown rice and a little bottle of what everybody called then tamari. No one used the word shoyu in those days to refer to soy sauce. In macrobiotics, it was always tamari, although now there's something that people call tamari that's different than shoyu. So I got that little bottle of tamari and that little bag of brown rice, and I went home and I made my first little batch of brown rice on that little electric hot plate. And it was horrible. It was terrible. I described it one time in an article I wrote as a pathetic patch of undercooked kernels drowning in a brown bog of tamari, because they really tasted like half-cooked popcorn kernels with soy sauce poured all over them. And I just, for some reason, I thought, well, it doesn't taste so great, but I don't know, maybe it's good for me. I had no concepts really of what it could do for me or the amazing influence that changing my food would have on me over time. then I graduated. I actually graduated barely from that school and came back to Kansas City, Kansas, where my parents lived and where I was raised. And one day in a local library, I saw a little catalog of community classes. And I opened it up, and lo and behold, there was someone offering a Zen macrobiotic cooking class. And I couldn't believe it. And very uncharacteristically, I signed up for it because I was really painfully shy in those days and didn't take easily to making new friends or being in new social settings with strangers. But I signed up for it. Something pushed me to do it. And the day came to go to the first class, and I drove across town. And I found the location, and I drove around and around the block because that shyness was setting in. But something in me said, stop, park, go in. So I did, and it ended up being a 19-year-old young woman who had moved to Kansas City from Tulsa, Oklahoma, where she had studied with a then-well-known macrobiotic cooking teacher named Jane Randolph. I don't know if you remember her or met her, Thea.
Yes, I remember her very well, yes.
And my cooking teacher's name was Patricia Atkins.
Oh, my.
Everyone called her Tish at the time. And, of course, I immediately had a huge crush on her because here was, in my mind, the queen of macrobiotic cooking. And I took these series of maybe 4 or 5 cooking classes in her very hot in the middle of Kansas City summer, that apartment. But it was the beginning of a new phase because now I was able to move beyond the little cookbook I had into benefiting from applying what I was learning from somebody in person. Within a year of starting macrobiotics, I came completely off of all my medication. To my parents' horror and to the doctor's, he wasn't supportive of it. But I had decided that that's what I needed to do. I tried to come off all the medication and go on the then famous all brown rice macrobiotic diet for 10 days. I tried to do that within the first few months of starting macrobiotics, but it was way too much, too fast for me. So I had to, kind of go back to my little bit wider macrobiotic eating and continue with the medication for another 11 months or so. And finally, I came off of it and the ulcer medication that I was taking, and there was other medications I was taking at the time as well. And I just set off on my own. I didn't really understand fully what was happening, but as I looked back over time, I began to see that my whole blood condition was changing, and through that, my cells, and through that, tissue, organs, glands, including my nervous system and brain. And my kidneys were becoming much stronger. And as they became stronger, I had much less and less and less fear and increasingly more personal courage to go out and do things, to look for jobs, so on. Prior to starting macrobiotics, I kind of used my diagnosis as a means of remaining dependent on my parents and staying at home, listening to music up in my room all day. And if I would go out and find a job, I would keep it maybe for 3 hours. And then I'd find a reason to quit, and I could always come home and say, oh, they don't treat me right or this or that. And my parents would kind of, sigh and go, well, we were told not to expect much of a future from out of David, and so I guess that's what's happening. And they were also told by the doctors that as they aged, they would be taking care of me as an aging child, and so they were plugged into that thinking, that prediction, and I could kind of play that in some ways, and I did. But then after I started macrobiotics, I found that I was able to get a job and keep it for, surprise, 3 days and not quit. But I would eventually quit because I was just beginning to make changes in my health and my life through macrobiotics, and I was still experiencing many ups and downs of in all kinds of ways. And so I wasn't stabilized yet. But then as time went by and I stayed with macrobiotics, and looking back, I found in my case, a lot of the change that was happening for me as far as food factors went were what I wasn't eating anymore. My macrobiotic cooking was very, very limited and narrow, and I was also cooking on an electric stove in my parents' basement in those beginning days. But I was following what the book said, don't eat anymore the sugars and the meats and artificial foods and so on and so forth. And I think more than what I was cooking, it was what I stopped using that started to help me change in the beginning, because every day that those old artificial foods weren't in my system was another day for my system to restore itself from that past way of living and eating. As time went by, I learned more and more about macrobiotic cooking and its benefits and so on. But I was very curious, naturally, because of what I was experiencing, what macrobiotics had to say about emotional health. I couldn't find much about it in the very few books. Remember, this was 1972. And at that time, there were very few books in English on macrobiotics. Maybe 10, maybe 6 at the most, and I probably only knew about 2 or 3 of them. But anyway, they didn't really say much about emotional health and healing, except I did begin to encounter the macrobiotic theory of the 5 transformations, and through that how organs and organ systems and their interactions can influence one's thinking and emotions and behavior, etc. So I found that curious. But I think what excited me the most was when I heard or read somewhere the statement from macrobiotics, biology precedes psychology. I'd never heard that before. No one had really ever said to me before in the psychological therapy, psychiatric treatments, and so on, that how I could change my biological foundation would affect my psychological state. And here was macrobiotics telling me exactly that. And I wasn't sure what all it meant. It was quite a big discovery for me, but I knew it meant something wonderful. Just, I didn't know how wonderful yet. I remember one night coming home from one of those first cooking classes I took with Patricia, and I drove up in front of my parents' home to get out, and I was in my little Volkswagen Bug. And when I turned off the engine, a voice came into my head and it said, "You have found something wonderful. Don't let it pass you by." I'll never forget that. And I was used to having things pass me by. You know, I might take a yoga class, or I might do an exercise class, or you know, something like that. And I just never stuck with anything. And yet I was getting this idea from this voice that this was something definitely not to pass by. And fortunately, I didn't. Through all the ups and downs and all the loneliness of in those days of trying to do something like macrobiotics in Kansas City, because there wasn't a school, there weren't restaurants, there wasn't a community of people getting together and having potlucks and so on, it was difficult to stay with something like macrobiotics, just to find the ingredients. I originally ordered most of my macrobiotic foods from Erewhon in Boston and had them shipped all the way to Kansas City, because there just wasn't good quality miso or shoyu, or you could get a few grains and things like that, grains and beans, but that was the extent of it in those days. So anyway, I continued to cook down in my parents' basement on the little gas electric stove, and began to change. My father was always worried that my grains and things were going to draw bugs. He was the kind of person that was worried about things spoiling and bugs coming and so on. And sometimes I'd be there in the basement, which was also his car garage and his paints and varnishes and so on. And I'd hear him come down the steps, and I'd hear behind me while I'm cooking at the stove, I'd hear a loud, "Krish, krish, krish." And I'd turn around, and there'd be my father with a big can of Raid insecticide spraying it. And so there I was cooking my organic foods in a fog of insecticide. But it I continued on. That was the living circumstances I had to be in at that time. And I continued on and on. And little by little, so many changes began to happen. The ulcers disappeared. The trips to the hospital just went away. Aches and pains that I had been experiencing of different kinds receded. I was able to sleep a normal sleeping cycle. I was starting to be able to maintain a job and interact better and have relationships and on and on. But it was a gradual process. And eventually I got married and had a son. And then my first wife and I started a macrobiotic center together in Kansas City. I wasn't really probably ready to do such a thing, but I was really motivated to share it with other people because of what it had already done for me, and that was just within the first few years. And then she and I eventually, that didn't work out, and we got a divorce, and later I married my current wife, Cynthia, and together she and I have had 5 children. And all of the predictions that the doctors initially made, not having children, never really having a career, graduating from school, growing, being taken care of by my parents as they aged and I aged, all of those predictions by the professionals disappeared and did not take hold or take root in my life. And so I was very fortunate, very lucky, that when I was 2 months old, you know, Michio Kushi arrived in America, 1949, I believe.
Yes.
I was born in September, and he arrived in America on Thanksgiving Day of 1949. And the Iharas, Herman and Cornelia Iharas, decided to come across from Japan to America and bring with them the spirit of their teacher, George Osawa, and introduce over time macrobiotics. And because of them and because of my friend who left the book at my door and because of the people who wrote the book and published the book and made it available to people to buy and give out to others, my life utterly changed. And so as much as I'm able and as much as it's possible for me, I do what I can do to make opportunities for other people today to learn about macrobiotics and to share it with the world. Many people, most people don't have the kind of diagnosis that I had with schizophrenia, but many people today are going about their day-to-day lives with laboring under the burden of depression and anxiety and insomnia and worry and not knowing, you know, what's going to come on at them the next day or the next hour, and worried about their children and all kinds of other conditions, such as bipolar conditions and these attention deficit conditions and all of these kinds of minor to major mental, emotional, psychological conditions that are showing up everywhere in our society. And the more that I can help people understand, both professional people in the world of psychology and behavior and so on, and just day-to-day people, understand that something like macrobiotics, which is known for its effect on cancer and physical conditions like that, can also be wonderfully useful in changing emotional, mental, thought problems, psychological conditions, because biology precedes psychology. Many people are spending lots of time in therapy and group sessions, and all those things can be helpful. But then they go out and they eat again the junky food, and it just kind of washes away the gains they've made at the emotional or analytical level, because at the biological level there's instability in their blood sugar, and instability in their hormone production and secretion, and instability in the nervous function, and instability at just the level of the single cells of the body. And when there's instability at that biological level, we can't have really true emotional, psychological, mental stability, because it will always be undermined by the instability at the biological level. So in 1989, my mother and I were very fortunate. I had written an article for East-West Journal, and I had sent Michio Kushi a letter saying, gee, I think that article might make a great book, never expecting, really, to hear back from him directly. Maybe I would hear back from a secretary someday. Well, within 5 to 7 days of sending out that letter, I got a call from Michio Kushi at the macrobiotic restaurant that Cynthia and I were running in Kansas City, and he said, please come to Boston in October. This was September. Please come to Boston. Actually, it was early October, and he wanted me to come when the publishers were going to be there towards the middle of October, I think. I couldn't believe it. My dream was always to write a book, and my mother's dream was always to write a book. She was an amateur writer. And here I was being contacted by Michio Kushi himself and invited to come to Boston to talk to these publishers. And so I went, and I met at the Kushi house, and the publishers, who were from Japan, looked over my little amount of materials I had, not much, I didn't have a manuscript, and at the end they said, we want to publish your book. I couldn't believe it. I told them that it was a great honor, and I would do my best, and the greatest joy for me was it would give my mother a chance to finally have her name on the cover of a book. So we wrote the book together called A Personal Peace, P-E-A-C-E, and it was published, I believe it was around 1989. And so I was very happy to be able to tell my story that way. I'm working now on a revision of that book and another book that's tentatively titled Diet for Mental Health, subtitled Whole Foods, Whole Mind, that I hope will give more detail and more practical how to do it information than my original book did. But I wasn't supposed to be here talking today. I wasn't supposed to be here in my life having a family today. I wasn't supposed to be able to wake up in the morning and feel happy about my life. But because of macrobiotics, not only the macrobiotic diet, but the macrobiotic view of life from which the macrobiotic diet has emerged, the macrobiotic view of life and the macrobiotic diet together have really allowed me to go forward on a wonderful adventure with many ups and downs, still today, but an adventure nonetheless. And I wake up each morning and going, yes, another day. What will it be? What will it bring? And I never imagined 40-some years ago that that would happen when I had spent time, which I didn't mention earlier, in psychiatric hospital, running away from home, a lot of behavioral problems, and so on. And so often I think of my co-patients there in that hospital ward in Kansas City in that summer of 1967, and hope that they have found to some degree in their own way, transformation of their lives as well. So thank you very much. I'm very happy to explain anything else about my history or what I went through or how I was eating or all of that. I'm not sure, Fia, if you have questions for me or how it goes from this point.
Sure. I just have a couple of questions, and then I'll open it up to the callers. Is your father still alive? What does he think about it all?
My mother passed away a year after our book was published.
Oh, wow.
And my father passed away in 2008.
Uh-huh.
He was 93 years old. And my parents both became my greatest cheerleaders and supporters in my pursuit of macrobiotics once it became clear to them that macrobiotics was what was doing it for me. It wasn't just a matter of that I was maturing, but that something really significant began in my life once I started pursuing macrobiotics. And in the beginning, my mother was not happy sharing her kitchen with me. That's why I had to cook down in the basement. My they just kind of tolerated it and sort of went along with me, but sometimes probably rolled their eyes about it as well. But as time went by, they became clear that macrobiotics had been the factor to really allow such a change in my life to take place.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yep.
Did you revisit any of the doctors that you had?
Well, when I started to write the book, I knew that people would ask about my psychiatrist and my medical records and so on at some point. So I wanted to reconnect with them. The original psychiatrist left Kansas City right about the time that I was getting interested in macrobiotics, and he moved away. And then I had a series of psychologists and people like that afterwards. I lost touch with them, but I did try my best to trace back to the original psychiatrist, Dr. Schneider, and I finally got an address to a post office box in Oregon. And I never wrote to him, and then I finally heard that he had passed away. And I never found, I never researched that much to find any of my original medical documents and all of that, which I'm sure exists somewhere there. In Kansas City, the hospital that I stayed at closed, and another hospital took over and so on. So I don't know exactly where all those kinds of documents are these days.
Oh, okay. That's amazing. I certainly hope that your story gets out more and you can really help influence and change the mindset, mental health medication mindset that's out there.
It's really heavy, and it seems worse today than in 1967. When I was going to a psychiatrist back then, I actually spent 50 minutes with him. They called it the 50-minute hour. And he actually did counseling and therapy and so on. Recently, in the last few years, I've had opportunity to go with some friends to their psychiatric appointments. And I was stunned. I was shocked that there wasn't any counseling to speak of, really. And it was all about the medication and the prescription, and the medications of today are weren't there back in 1967, as far as I know. But it's all about medication today, even more than 1967. So you would think that things had grown and improved and matured, but the understanding, as far as I can tell, in the world of psychology and psychiatry, of the influence of food on the blood and nervous system and the brain function, et cetera, is woefully inadequate.
Yes. That's amazing. So I will open it up now to anybody who would like to ask a question. You can do so by pressing 5-star on your phone. Feel free to do so now. And until we do, we can keep on talking. David has a wonderful, successful online school at www.macroamerica.com. And you've just revised the website.
Right. You just launched the revised version of it last week. And a few days later, we launched the brand new Facebook fan page for Macrobiotics America. So to find the fan page, you can just go to facebook.com/Macrobiotics America, all together like that, and you can see what the fan page is all about. There's lots of information there. There's lots of ability to get involved and add your ideas, your favorite recipes. There are scholarships for fans. There are special online free classes for fans as well. So if you go there to the Facebook fan page for Macrobiotics America and join in, you can participate in all of that as well as the website.
Great. If you'd like to ask a question, please press 5-star on your phone, and I will see that you would like to ask a question. So please feel free to do so anytime. Let me ask you, David. Did you get into a lot of recreational drugs and other like wild foods and junk foods and things like that?
You know, actually, I did.
Uh-huh.
It was wild for the times, but not compared to today, really. I did all the usual or commonly done hippie days types of recreational drugs as well as the medications I was taking. I sometimes took other people's pills. I took my mother's diet pills. I did a lot of drinking, a lot of junky food. I mean, my favorite dessert, my favorite snack was to come home from school and fill up one of my mother's big stainless steel mixing bowls with vanilla ice cream and pour half a box of brown sugar over it and eat that. And then on the other end of the food spectrum, I liked, excuse me, I liked meats very, very well done.
Mm.
So bacon had to be cooked so much you could hear it snap.
Wow.
So I was on both extremes, overly done, dry kinds of meats and eggs and things like that, and lots of sugary stuff, which is a recipe for schizophrenia, in my opinion. And also, with schizophrenia, really, of course, all the body needs to be healed, but I found especially the kidneys are involved, especially if the person has a factor of paranoia involved in the diagnosis, which more often than not they do. Since my book came out, I've been contacted by a lot of people from around the world. Sometimes I've received calls from psychiatric hospitals in far distant lands. The person's calling from a payphone or something, wanting to know what they can do to change their condition. They're in very difficult circumstances because you have to be able to change your eating, which they don't often do in psychiatric hospitals, allow that to happen. But then I remember the story of Neil Scott, the fellow who was in prison and was able to heal his cancer while in prison, in how he was selecting or not selecting from the available prison food. So I learned from that macrobiotic healing can take place under all kinds of difficult circumstances.
Yes. Yes, that's amazing. So feel free to, if you have a question, please press 5-star on your phone at any time. You mentioned you were in the hospital. How long a period were you in the hospital?
It wasn't a long stay. I'm thinking it was probably about 10 days.
Huh?
And then what had happened previous to that and what initiated the hospital stay was, in the summer of 1967, I decided I was going to run away from Kansas City and go out to California and join up with the hippies in the Haight-Ashbury Summer of Love time. And so I did that. And I ended up meeting up with the wrong people, almost murdered. Attempt was made on my life. I ended up in dumped in Golden Gate Park, and being found by the police there, and taken into a hospital, free clinic, Haight-Ashbury free clinic, and so on. And then my parents were contacted. They had no idea where I was. They just knew I had gone from home. And my mother flew out and got me. I was in a children's psychiatric ward there for a time in San Francisco called the Macaulay Institute, which, much to my surprise, is still there. I don't know if it still runs under as a psychiatric place, but I saw the name on the side of the building one day driving around in San Francisco, and it surprised me that it was still there. Anyway, from there I went home, and then I was put in this psychiatric ward,
mm-hmm.
and with people in straitjackets and waking up in the middle of the night with someone with an extreme state of paranoia standing at the end of my bed, threatening to strangle me or kill me or whatever. So that was about 10 days, and then I was released from there to my parents' care and began exploring, went on. I didn't explore macrobiotics until 1972, but I went back to my old way of eating and living, and then around 1968, I got increasingly more involved in the then available street drugs, marijuana and hashish and speed and mescaline and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, one question that often comes up from people I get calls from with varying psychiatric issues, or they have friends or family members who are wanting to explore macrobiotics, is how to come off the medication that they've been on. And what I found is that they usually need to come off of it gradually under their doctor's supervision. I've encountered a number of cases in the last 5 years of people who've gone to macrobiotic counselors who told them to, as quickly as possible, get off of their psychiatric medications. And then some of those people went into severe psychotic tailspin and episodes, exactly, and had to get back on their medication. So what I have concluded from those experiences is that psychiatric medications are still something that need to be better understood by macrobiotic counselors, and how to their effects on the body, the nervous system, and the brain, and how to gradually come off of them. But it needs to be done with that person's doctor's supervision, because what happens is a lot of times people on medications and with psychiatric issues discover macrobiotics, and it can easily be misinterpreted. They can also become very excited about the possibilities that macrobiotics is holding out to them. And so they want to get to that as quickly as possible. And yet it has to be really a steady, gradual process of changing and healing and taking it one day at a time when it comes to psychiatric issues and especially psychiatric medication. So I never recommend cold turkeying of especially long-term psychiatric medication.
Yeah. Now, you yourself, again, if you have any questions, please press 5-star on your phone and I will pick on you. Now, you chose to get off of your medications yourself. Here we have a question. Hello?
Hi.
Hi, welcome. Please,
hi.
Go ahead.
Hi, Pia. Congratulations for these wonderful conferences. I'm so happy that you are back.
Thank you
to David. Everything he says is most interesting, and I will ask him a million questions right now. But the one I think I'm going to ask is, as a Californian right now, what do you think of the legalization of marijuana?
What do I think about the possibility of the legalization of marijuana in California?
Yes.
Well, that's a good question, because it's something that everyone out here has been discussing, and people are already using marijuana in my area. I live in Butte County, which is the number one county for marijuana cultivation in California, and the marijuana grown in Butte County is widely considered around America to be the, quote, best, unquote, available. So it's a very commonly discussed and available thing out here, because so many people now have, by the state's law, not by the federal law, but by the state's law, have permission to grow marijuana for medical purposes. But, of course, that has opened up all sorts of potential for misuse and abuse, which it has and which is happening. I think marijuana is physiologically and psychologically detrimental over time to the majority of people. And so in the same way, I see overuse of alcohol as detrimental to the majority of people in time. It's easy to not notice it when one's younger, but over time, these things all have cumulative effects. So I'm not keen on it being legalized, but at the same time, I recognize people are using it anyway. And will legalization of marijuana prevent people from misusing it? No. And not legalizing it won't prevent people from misusing it either. So I'm, in a way, I'm somewhat neutral on the subject, because I don't think either way, legalizing it or not legalizing it, is going to be a benefit really to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I also believe in free choice. And so I'm in somewhat of a quandary or a dilemma as to any sort of final say from me on what I think about it right now, because I do believe that people are going to choose what they choose and take what they take and eat what they eat, no matter what sorts of, you know, laws or admonitions against things or research about its effects and so on are out there. We have all that already about smoking and drinking and high-fat diet and so on and so forth, right?
Mm-hmm.
So people go on taking it. I don't know, what do you think about it?
Do you mean me?
Yes.
Oh. I mostly agree with you. I think I agree with you. People are going to do it anyway, and I guess over time it's detrimental to health. It's just so many people say, oh, it's enlightening, but as someone said to me, as Nietzsche said, there are gene ways to get enlightened and jam things to get enlightened. So I guess maybe marijuana is the easy way. I mean, I'm not interested at all, but it's just, you know, it seems like a big issue.
I think more people use it for relaxing than they get some sort of visions from it or insights from it. I rarely hear people talking about marijuana in those terms these days. It's more just loosen up, relax, laid back, you know, that kind of thing. And mainly people get too tense, right? Too much stress, too much tightness, and then also how they eat makes more tightness. And then they go looking for the big relaxation.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Great. So we're almost out of time. Actually, we're out of time. But well, there is one more question from someone else, which I will take.
Okay.
And, so thank you for your question. And the next person, hello.
Hi. Hi, David. My name is Susan, phoning from Massachusetts.
Hi, Susan.
Hi. Thank you for your wonderful talk today.
You're welcome.
My question is, do you attribute all of the success of your mental health to just the food, or is it the process of, you know, the macrobiotic, sitting down, chewing your food? Does that come into play with you as well?
I have to say, for me, it wasn't chewing. I wasn't a good chewer. I didn't know about chewing, and the books I had didn't talk much about it. There were times when I would go on rice fasts and chew. This was some years later. And I would chew every single mouthful. I'd rice fast for 10 days and chew every mouthful 200 times. I did that. I survived that. But it wasn't something that I regularly did. I found that in my case, it was mainly the overall general change of the way I was eating and no longer eating what I had been eating.
Yeah.
The sugars, the ice cream, the junky food, the drugs, et cetera. And that alone was already beginning to make changes just because, you know, my thinking wasn't as cloudy and so on. But I did go through, you know, setbacks and periods where I remember one time my parents had a family reunion and not everything got consumed. So down in the basement, there were large gallons of root beer. And one day it was really hot and I was feeling really dry and I was probably eating really, really too strictly at the time anyway. And I just picked up one of those gallons, jugs, and opened it and guzzled it and guzzled it and guzzled it and guzzled it. And I thought, well, gee, I don't feel so bad. And I guzzled some more. And I think the next day I drank some more and I ate some ice cream. And occasionally my brothers before that would say, gee, you know, you're looking kind of skinny, and because I lost a lot of weight really fast. But I was feeling better. So I would get a little nervous and anxious about what people were saying. And I'd say, well, what can I do to gain some weight? And I'd eat ice cream or drink this root beer or whatever and gained a little weight. And then they'd say, gee, you're looking better and better. But I was feeling worse and worse. And then one day I woke up and my eyes were swollen shut and puffy and full of mucus or whatever. And I remember trying to open my eyes and going, oh, okay, now I remember what sugar does to me. And from then on, I didn't go around it much. And so I wasn't really a good boy at doing macrobiotics in the sense of doing it very perfectly. In fact, I found that maybe it was a good thing for me that I did it less perfectly and I didn't know what trying to do it perfectly means, because I've encountered so many people over the years who tried to do what they thought was perfect macrobiotics or a counselor told them was perfect or a book or whatever. And they just got frustrated and many people gave up. So I'm sometimes telling people, can you do it a little more imperfectly, and they look at me with shock in their eyes. But what I mean is in a way that's really going to work for you, in a way that you can really sustain for a long period of time, not just a couple of weeks or a couple of months. I'm much more today interested in helping people be a long-term success at a practical implementation of macrobiotics for themselves, rather than a short-term failure of trying to do it perfectly by some book or some preconceived macrobiotic template that they've come upon. If a person can chew well, that's great. But if they chew and it makes them frustrated and they try and chew, sometimes I've seen people still an hour and a half later in the kitchen at dining room at macrobiotic events, still chewing. And yet they don't look like they're really enjoying the process in some cases. So I found that enjoyment of it is a key factor.
Yeah, I stumbled, I think, in learning as I went along. I learned that I can be anxious by nature, and I've learned just by sitting down and having my meals and chewing them, it brings me a sense of calm and balance. And I found if I've happened to skip one, I feel kind of off, so I like my routine.
Sure, a lot of people do.
Yeah.
A lot of people find a routine and calmly chewing and all of those things very sort of calming and stabilizing for them. So it's important to really find out what it is that resonates with you in the different macrobiotic teachings that we encounter.
Yeah, wonderful.
Great. Well, wonderful. Thank you. We're out of time now. David, would you like to share any contact information or how people can get in touch with you so if, in case they do have other questions?
Sure. People can contact me in a number of different ways. They can call me at 530-532-1918. They can email me at david@macroamerica.com. And they can also contact me through our website, macroamerica.com, and our Facebook fan page for Macrobiotics America. I will look forward to anyone's questions, and anyone who wants to contact me, please do.
Great. Could you repeat your phone number once more? I think.
Sure. It's 530-532-1918.
Great. Wonderful. Okay. So thanks again, David. That was great. And maybe we can get you on again.
I would love it.
Yes. So really, again, thanks for everybody for coming and joining us and for supporting the calls. That was really very helpful to me and to keeping these going. Again, Monday night, tomorrow night at 9 p.m., we will have Bob Michael, who will share his story from recovery from stage 4 kidney cancer. And then next week, Sunday, same time, we will have Karen Allen, who will share her story of Lyme disease. So thanks again. I'm going to stop the recording. This call...